The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
The poet Marianne Moore, who was a rather salty suffragist and an inveterate baseball fan, who lived most of her life in New York, once wrote a poem published in the journal Poetry with simply that title that began, "I too dislike it." There are things that are important beyond all this fiddle. Reading it, however, with a certain contempt for it, one discovers in it, after all, a place for the genuine. Hands that can grasp, eyes that can dilate, hair that can rise if it must. These things are important not because a high-sounding interpretation can be put upon them, but because they are useful. But when they become so derivative as to become unintelligible, the same thing may be said for all of us, that we do not admire what we cannot understand. The bat holding on upside down in quest of something to eat, elephants pushing a horse, taking a roll, a tireless wolf under a tree, the immovable critic twitching his skin like a horse that feels a flea, the baseball fan, the statistician. Nor is it valid, I guess, to discriminate against business documents and school books, for all these phenomena are important. One must make a distinction, however, when dragged into prominence by half poets, the result is not poetry, nor till the poets among us can be literalists of the imagination. Above insolence and triviality, and can present for inspection imaginary gardens with real toads in them. Shall we have it? In the meantime, if you demand on the one hand the raw material of poetry in all its rawness, and that which is on the other hand genuine, you are interested in poetry. The same, I think, can be said of religion. Although I've given my entire adult life to it, I too dislike it. There are things that are important beyond rote rituals, but practicing it here in diverse community, even with periodic impatience for it all, I've discovered in it, after all, a place for the genuine. Hands that do help, souls that can grow, spirits that can rise and give praise if they must. And these things are important not because a high-sounding interpretation can be put upon them, but because they too are humanly useful. But when religion becomes so derivative as to be unintelligible, the same thing may be said for all of us. We don't admire what we don't understand. Theologians splitting hairs, wild prophets shouting, the predatory preacher, the immovable cynic, lifting his nose like an arrogant ass feeling a flea, the sectarian fanatic. Nor, I suppose, is it wise to discriminate against pledge cards and annual campaigns. All of these phenomena are important, but one must make a distinction that when dragged into prominence by the half-faithful, the half-selfish, the result is not always religion. Nor until the truly faithful among us can be doers of the word and not hearers only. Beyond self-righteous posturing and piety, and can present for inspection the imagined beloved community right here on earth with toads like us, shall we have it? But in the meantime, If, like me, you demand, on the one hand, the raw material of spiritual life in all its rawness, and that which is, on the other hand, genuine, then I would say you need that form of spiritual connection that can only be found in authentic and diverse community. Her fellow poet, William Carlos Williams, objected to Marianne's poem. He said, "There's no such thing as poetry. There are only poems." And similarly, the philosopher John Dewey said, "There's no such thing as religion in the abstract. There are only particular religious communities and people." And I have to agree. Forget the abstractions and generalizations. Robert Frost, whose beautiful words were set to the anthem we heard, said, "Poetry begins with a lump in the throat." And religion, too, I think it's good to remember, similarly begins with a sense of awe that there's something rather than nothing, and that it is at times frighteningly beautiful. The unmerited beauty of being itself causes everyone to have a religion, even those who've lost much of their sense of wonder and who've started to worship only wealth or power or themselves. "Our religion is written not in our words," said Jefferson, "but in our lives." And he, of all people, would have known how often there is a gap between our ideals and our deeds. Religion is the human response to the dual mystery of being alive, yet knowing we too will have to die. So said my late friend Forrest Church, "It's older and more universal than any creed or cult. No wonder so many forms of faith center on those ancestors who are wise enough to know that the first word of religion should be spoken against religion, as did Jesus and the Buddha and the prophet and Socrates and so many others." Wisdom is painfully gained about right relations with one another in this spiritual journey we share, on this fragile planet we share. It's gained and then often lost or ignored. But the problem of darkness, like the problem of evil, said the poet-philosopher George Santayana, doesn't exist for someone who steadily gazes at the stars. No doubt the darkness is there, fundamental, pervasive, and unconquerable, except at pinpoints where the stars twinkle. But the problem is not why there is such darkness, but what is this light that breaks through for us so remarkably? And granting this light, why we have eyes to see and hearts to be gladdened, and I would add, exemplars to be followed. Now, some religious communities, of course, limit their stargazing to honoring just one luminous soul in the distant past or a designated set of saints. But in this present planetarium of the spirit, I think we look up not only to the sky, but at times around the room. We trace constellations that include not just the brightest lights of humanity, but the connections between those of lesser orders of magnitude who take light from our chalice and make it real in their lives, who know that that is more than just a symbol of the light within every human heart. Religion, said my poetic mentor, Jake Trapp, as a set of right beliefs and right observances, becomes divisive and absurd. But religion is walking with others, being attentive to others, responding to them in responsibility, is no creed, but a way of life. To be truly religious is every day to be grateful for the much we are given, and to respond by seeking to give in return as much as we can. Religion is a way of life with responsiveness, compassion, reverence for sacred potential, respect for ourselves and for one another, for Mother Earth and all its creatures. It's a way of life renewed each day in blessing, which love of life makes more beautiful, even to the end. Is it possible to do this all by yourself? Well, many today seem to think so. I'm spiritual, but not religious, they say. But I seriously doubt, at least for myself, that it is possible to be truly spiritual without a community of practice. Because the spiritual dimension of life is the between dimension, the dimension of connection. And the very roots of the word religion are in the Latin religio, meaning literally to relink. And so we are here today once more to relink ourselves in gratitude and in joy with the very source of all being, and to celebrate in multiple dimensions the value of community. Teachers and volunteers who introduce children to the genuine and enduring within religion, no matter what clothes they wear, who help the young embrace their human sexuality as a blessing and responsibility, but never as a source of shame. New friends and members finding among us a covenant of mutual care and trust, of spiritual growth and social responsibility freely embraced. Activists who learn among us to move beyond mere anger and despair to persistent, faithful, humble, loving witness on behalf of justice and peace. Yeah, we're far from perfect, toads like us. That's why my dear friend Rosemary Bray McNatt, when she graced this pulpit a few weeks ago, opened her time of meditation by acknowledging how often we fall short of the religious ideals we profess. And yet, perhaps that too is why we return here, Sunday after Sunday, to restore our faith, as it were, even in ourselves. When asked why he went to Unitarian Church so faithfully, the poet Oliver Wendell Holmes replied, "I seem to have within me a plant called reverence, and it requires watering at least every 7 days." Another name for reverence, I think, is simply kindness. Given the cruelties of the world, it too requires renewal and reflection. The Palestinian-American poet Naomi Shihab Nye writes, "Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things, feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth, or what you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved. All this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop, the passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you feel the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where that man in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness is the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows, and you see the size of the cloth. It is only kindness, then, that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to distribute bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. Friends, like others who spoke here this morning out of their own experience of this congregation, I too now stand to testify that there is something genuine here among us. Far from perfect, but genuine. Belief is many things, so is disbelief. But for us, religion is what happens to us when we open our minds to a wider perspective, when we open our hearts to a deeper compassion, when we feel our souls called to a greater devotion to all that upholds life, and feel a deeper opposition to all that would degrade it. It is this that is worthy of our love and our loyalty, our pledges of time and treasure and daily meditation. And if you have nothing in the way of treasure to offer, please know that you too are always welcome here, your simple presence being gift enough. But if, like me and so many in this wealthy city, you have more than most, please be reminded of that ancient admonition from those to whom more has been given, more is expected. And so learn to be kind, learn also to be generous, first in spirit and then in substance. Amen.
That'll be my cue. Thank you. You notice in the program it says that I'm here to do a testimonial. You might wonder about what? It's about the annual campaign. So let me tell you some reasons why my husband and Larry and I participate annually in the campaign. For me, it has been a long and winding road from the church I grew up in on Lake Street in Minneapolis to UUSF on Franklin Street in San Francisco. I remember when my husband Larry and I first walked up the steps of this church, there was John Burens, the former minister, dressed in his Sunday robes, as he is this morning, turns out. And he was greeting parishioners, and he was standing next to a sign that said, "Welcome home." It caught my throat. We entered that day some 10 years ago. We stayed, we participated, and we've contributed. The question asked of me and us today is, why contribute to the annual campaign? Let me share three of our reasons. First, it takes resources to keep the home going, to keep the lights on, the structure sound, the amazing staff secure, the bills paid, and the doors open. If we want to keep the home lights burning, we accept our accountability as members to do our part. And second, we contribute to support the family, the beloved community that gathers in this space, whether it's this physical space or engagement via Zoom. Of course, at first this place didn't exactly feel like Cheers to us. Nobody knew our names. But that changed through all our being welcomed into various classes, events, groups, coffee breaks, committees, marches, opportunities, and challenges. And then finally there was that Sunday when somebody said to me, "Good morning, Judith. And I remembered her name. "Hi, Kathleen," I said. And suddenly, it started to feel like home. Like my birth family, my UUSF family shares a covenant to help one another. Sometimes that might just be remembering a name, and sometimes it means sharing our resources. And the third reason Larry and I make a contribution to this church annually is that we consider it an act of service. Larry and I make UUSF a donation priority every year. It's the first commitment we make. We like the annual campaign theme that Jack and Sherry launched last week with "You got a friend in we." I'll never forget that. Singing it, they did. For us, that first "we" is for this space, and our beloved community. But that second "we" is for the broader community outside these doors and airwaves. And in the loving spirit of this church, we see our donations as part of service as our prayer. At the very least, every year when we make a donation, it reminds me that this is about we, not me. To sum it up, we contribute to be accountable, to be helpful, and to be of service. And by getting our pledge in before March 17th, I've got it right here this morning, we're gonna get it in before March 17th, maybe we win one of the two raffled weekends in the mountains, just asking. So we get it in. If you get in before March 17th, you have a chance at that, the mountains retreat for the weekend. So whatever your reasons are, please join us in contributing to the annual campaign. And thanks for listening.
What does this church mean to me personally? When I take time to reminisce about recent and past experiences, stretching back over the last 50 years here, the feelings that I come up with are joy, peace, and full self-expression. This January, I realized that I really, really wanted to go to India with the choir. Mark spent a lot of time making this happen, and it was a completely awesome experience. I heard the sublime notes of Mark and the choir in temples across northern India. And I mean, this was definitely a peak experience of my life. On the 6-hour drives between cities, I sat with various members of our congregation. Each time I scratched the surface just a little bit, I realized that I was talking to a fascinating, kind, principled person. In my life, these exchanges, these stories live with me and sustain me. I realized that they connect me with those three things that I mentioned: joy, peace, and full self-expression. Well, now I know what I get from the church, but what do I give? Oh, my ideas, my personality. I don't think so. I mean, I'm not sure that counts, but what else? What else could there be? Oh yeah, my pledge. Well, you know what, I really wanna be fully part of this party. I want to give. I want to support. I want this place to continue. And I want all the helpers here to continue. So, logic, pure logic, suggests that I increase my pledge over last year's. So, that's what I'll do. not because I'm in the throes of pledge frenzy, but because it seems proportional and right. Thank you.